It's the forgotten war, but it rages on. The civil war in South Sudan is now in its fifth year. As a fresh round of peace talks begins in Ethiopia between the warring parties, the UN says the conflict has now reached epic proportions. The number of refugees is set to rise beyond 3 million by the end of this year, and that will make it Africa's largest refugee crisis since the Rwandan genocide in 1994. Tens of thousands of people have been killed in this conflict, which has put 1.5 million people on the brink of starvation. Human rights and aid groups have also raised concerns over a rise in child abductions and trafficking. Tim Costello is the chief advocate for World Vision, and he's just returned from visiting some of the refugee camps in South Sudan and northern Uganda. Tim Costello, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
South Sudan is the world's youngest nation, but since December 2013, it's been in a state of war. You've travelled there, you've seen firsthand the implications of this conflict. Describe for us the situation on the ground as you've seen it.
1 million South Sudanese have now fled into Uganda, and I was in the north of Uganda in the camps. When I was there in April last year, there was over 3,000 people arriving. It's down under 1,000 arriving, but the flow continues.
Arriving another every day one, or every week or every...
That's 3,000 a day.
Wow.
3,000 a day, down under 1,000 a day now. World Vision, which runs one of the biggest camps in Vepi, where that UN quote you just made said it's of epic proportions, is absolutely right. This human column of suffering, particularly... The unaccompanied children is just devastating. So many children have fled following the mass of human suffering because their parents have said, just follow the neighbours, just run, just go. So a huge amount of our work there is just trying to find foster families for those children. Look, the one thing that gives you hope is that the Ugandan government has not closed the border, though 1 million people have gone in the last year, and in fact give them 30 by 30 metres of land and let them use the healthcare and schools of Uganda, poor as they are. Given our situation here in Australia, this attitude of the Ugandans really moved me and touched me.
So in just on that, in Uganda, they're not confined to camps. They're allowed to move freely and go to school and have land?
That's right. That's right. So what the areas is a camp of reception and registration, and the office of the Prime Minister of Uganda with World Vision and other agencies registers them on arrival. And then there's the system of allocating them land. It's not very good land, and even though we give them tools to grow vegetables and to try and make a living, it's pretty hard, but they are allowed to go to the schools in the Ugandan host communities and health centres, poor as those schools are, because 60% of Ugandans are trying to survive on less than $2 a day.
Yeah.
So it is quite miraculous generosity.
This is one of the poorest parts of the globe. South Sudan itself only gained independence in 2011 and has been in civil conflict since 2013. So it's not really got on its own two feet. What the centre of this are allegations of ethnic cleansing. This is a war along ethnic lines. There is another attempt at peace talks going on in Ethiopia. From what you've seen, is there any chance or any mood to broker peace?
Look, yes and no. I met with the first vice president and I indeed did a press conference there that was on TV. Ironically, the two other Ugandan, South Sudanese, one the MP and one the vice president spokesman, were respectively Australian citizens, graduates of Adelaide University and Monash University. And I said to them, did three Australians just do a press conference on South Sudanese television? They laughed and said, yes.
Hmm.
This diaspora of Australian trained people going back actually is the future hope. Part of the problem is that those who've been guerrillas fighting the Bush War haven't made the transition to government, the transition from military to really civilian government. So the hope is the diaspora going back. But right at the moment, a million in Uganda, another 1.5 million South Sudanese in other neighbouring countries, Kenya, Ethiopia, the Central African Republic.
There's a global appeal. $3.2 billion is the target that's been launched. Half of that money basically to help those who are in this state of limbo, who have really no place to be and no home and no means. The other half is to help countries like Uganda who are hosting them. What's the state of that global appeal? How are government funds going?
Only one third of that money has come in, and we are desperately worried that this is the forgotten humanitarian crisis, that people in some ways have almost given up on Uganda, on South Sudan, sorry. They say, well, we all had great joy at independence. Mm. Now, one party, it's just the governing party, has split and pushed the ethnic button of some 64 tribes there. And so this is really quite desperate. It was very desperate. Particularly what moved me was these unaccompanied children, kids who'd seen their parents killed, and foster families, like a single mother, Harriet, with her own four kids, who'd taken in three boys who had seen their own mother shot in the back and killed as they were fleeing. That really touched me.
Tim, the state of the children, I mean, these children are not safe, obviously. They have no parents, they have no one looking after them, they have no home. They are already children being drafted into the conflict, they are child soldiers. We know that sexual abuse is rife and sex and rape is being used as a weapon of war. But there's also a disturbing trend, which are reports of child kidnapping and child trafficking. What is this, how extensive is this? And are children being used as ransom? Are they being used as free labour? What is the monetary value in this?
Yeah, chaos and war always gives the opportunity for traffickers, for predators, sexual predators, for all the worst things that happen to children. In the press conference I did in South Sudan, I said, really, the only job adults have in the world, the only job, is to protect children. And I was really having a word about this abducting, kidnapping, using effectively as domestic labour or war or what we'd call slavery. That as a child-focused organisation, is really the focus of our work, running child-friendly spaces, connecting children to foster families, training the parents, giving the foster parents extra money to protect these children from abduction and misuse.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. It's 3 minutes to seven. We're speaking with Tim Costello, a chief advocate with World Vision. Tim, talking about safe places for children, former workers from Jodie O'Shea House, which is one of the biggest institutions for children in Bali, are accusing it of sourcing children who actually have living parents. They're not orphans, even though it was called an orphanage. So from a remote island to help solicit donations. Indonesian officials haven't been able to verify these claims. Jodie O'Shea House denies these claims. But what, in your view, how much of an issue is there with orphanages or places for children like this that do attract donors and do have, I suppose, a tourism attached to it?
It's a really worrying issue. World Vision has never done orphanages, or at least not in my time, not for 20 years. The worst family is almost axiomatically better than the best institution. And voluntourism, as it's often called, which is the business model, because you get such a wonderful buzz as a tourist hugging children, saying, look, they look wonderful, that it's actually a money spinner. That's not to say all orphanages are doing this, and we haven't verified this, but we know it's going on, that kids who have parents are in these places as part of the business model. Australians have to be really careful, really do their due diligence. Thinking they're helping, they may not be.
Can I just ask you finally, back home in domestic politics, politics is back. The Prime Minister's convinced the corporate tax cut plan is the way to deliver higher wages and more jobs. If the business tax cuts are passed, would you like to see the government negotiate some kind of compact with businesses in return for tax cuts, you know, a pledge to pass on the benefits through pay rises perhaps? Is
Absolutely.
This a good idea?
Yeah, I think it's a very good idea. We all know the trickle down for the last 30 years seems to have trickled up, a tsunami of trickling up, not trickling down, with record profits. We're over simply trusting without a compact, really, that's almost ironclad, demanding a fair share of any of that tax cut. That's absolutely fundamental for me.
Tim Costello, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
That's a pleasure.
Tim Costello is the chief advocate of World Vision, and he's just returned from visiting some of the refugee camps in northern Uganda, as he was telling us about, where something like 1,000, between 1,000 and 3,000 South Sudanese people, refugees, are streaming in every single day.